So we're talking about the life of No Regret, and I wanted to talk a little bit about the first few lines this evening. And I did make some notes earlier, but they're still on my desk at home, so we'll see how it goes. So the lines are, "Your radiant face, like a mountain peak catching the first burst of morning light, has awesome and unequalled majesty. Like black ink by comparison are the sun, the moon, or the Mani treasure." So the first thing is to remember that this whole text is spontaneously spoken when a seeker of the Dharma, if you like, meets his teacher for the first time. So it's his teacher's face that he's describing in these first few lines. The teacher's name is Lokeshvara Raja, who is a fully enlightened being. Earlier I was flicking through a book and I found a quote by Wallace Stevens that said, "A poet is a priest of the invisible," which I liked very much. But I also thought, well, in some ways a priest is a priest of the invisible as well. And in some ways it's true and in some ways it's not true. Because what the quality of radiance that Dharmakara, who speaks this verse, is describing is something that can be seen in the face of his teacher, but you sort of can't describe it mechanically. You can't say, well, he was smiling a lot and his eyes were kind of crinkled at the edges, and it's something beyond what you can use ordinary language to describe. So he resorts to this poetry, saying his face is lit up like the side of a mountain. So it's kind of, it's invisible in the sense that you can't use ordinary language to describe it, but it's visible in the sense that you can experience it. So he experiences something when he meets his teacher, and you could say that also his teacher was in a particular state of mind that he was experiencing at that time. So for him, it was a very real state of elation or being glowing, if you like. And you can probably imagine sometimes when you've seen people and you think, gosh, they're really radiant today, they're really lit up, often if they're just in love. But in this case, his teacher is maybe in a kind of state of love for all beings, or love without one particular person, a kind of enlightened love. So he says, "Your face is like a mountain peak catching the first burst of morning sun." And if you've ever seen a mountain, either in real life or the photographs, just catching this kind of orange yellow light as the sun comes up, it's that kind of breathtaking beauty that he's describing seeing in his teacher's face. And he goes on to say, it's awesome, it's unequalled, there's nothing else like it in the world. It's got unequalled majesty. And he compares, the metaphor he uses is like, he's saying, if I put the sun next to your face, it would be like the sun was made from black ink. And the ink he's describing is the black ink that's used in Sumi paintings, which is a very dark, dense black ink that doesn't reflect any light at all. He says, by comparison, this is how the sun is. So your face is kind of, it's of a brightness that I can't even imagine. It's brighter than the sun, it's brighter than the moon, and it's brighter than the Mani treasure, which is a kind of sacred jewel that obviously is very bright. We can guess from the way it's used in this comparison. So there's a couple of things that I wanted to draw out. One was this sense that this isn't a text that's describing how something is in a sort of sense of, well, that's kind of rational. It's not as simple as, well, a Buddha is like a mountain face and that's how it really is. Or it's not saying that that's true. It's, what it's saying is that the experience of this disciple when he encountered his teacher was of feeling this kind of great overwhelming sense of love coming from him, and his way of expressing it was of comparing him to for these wonderful images. And you can say this is true for the whole of Buddhism. It's not interested in saying, although you'll see that people do use it this way, in kind of my experience or how it's useful to me, is not to say the world is like this or the world is like that. There's this realm, there's that realm, there's this kind of after death or before death, or this is how this, you know, everything's empty, so it means this is what it means about the philosophy of materials and so on. It's much more, or I'm much more interested in, how Buddhism describes the experience of what it means to be a person. And so this poetic language is ideal for describing what it means to be a person. And in this moment, is describing what it means to be two people, if you like. One is Dharmakara, who's saying these words, and the other is Lokeshvara Raja, who is in a state of, as I said, he's glowing like he's in love, but he's not in love with somebody in particular. He is in a state of being in love with every leaf on every tree, every insect that he can hear, all the clouds in the sky, all the disciples that come from him, in front of him. This kind of spiritual bliss, a sense of being connected with something even beyond the world. And you can imagine that what this teacher is connected with is something that he would describe using this kind of poetic language. If somebody were to ask him, gosh, what is it that you're seeing in your mind? What is it that's making you glow like this? He might say, well, it's like the side of a mountain that's lit up. So he's experiencing this bliss, and then his disciple experiences something of that reflected in how the teacher is. So there's something about a grand spiritual experience that the teacher's sitting in, and which inspires the disciple to say these words. So Buddhism, for me, can be a way of understanding these spiritual experiences. And we have all this wonderful language, and he goes on to make several vows. And there may be times in our lives as ordinary practitioners where we experience something like that kind of inspiration. Either we meet a great teacher or we're sitting in meditation and suddenly everything seems to come alive. Everything is lit up with this kind of light that's brighter than the sun. And we're like, wow, that's really amazing. Well, maybe that happens once or twice in your lifetime, or maybe if you go on retreat, you maybe get a sense of it. And then, like the actual mountain, some clouds come across or the mist comes down, and then you have a winter season where it's dark and dingy and you never get these kind of amazing sunrises for a very long time. And this is something about ordinary people's spiritual experience, that in fact you can almost use the kind of idea of a year or a day to give something of the sense of this. So in the morning, the sun comes up and you get this wonderful colour on the side of the mountain. And then maybe some... So you get this inspiration that carries you through the morning, and maybe some clouds come across and you're less connected spiritually to the world, your mind's full of ordinary thoughts. And you get to noon and everything has this kind of... Everything's lit up, but it has a kind of flat quality, the midday light. Maybe you get some more clouds in the afternoon, and then you come to the end of the day and the sun's setting and you get this wonderful pink colour on the side of the mountain, and you can think of this as being something like the experience of a good death is like the sunset. And Amida Buddha is particularly, although I started with the image of a sunrise, Amida Buddha is particularly associated with the sun setting and this sense of that kind of beauty, but also understanding that it comes and goes, that there's a transience to it. And actually there's something about, which I won't say much about now, but there's something about the nature of practice which is preparing us for the experience of having a good death, like the beauty of the sunset on the side of a mountain. As you can see, there's lots in those four lines, and I'm sure I could go on and on and on and on. But I'm going to stop there, and next week we'll pick a few more lines and think about those. No more meter book.